Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's T-A-I. LORMADE101.com for details. I would like to say hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jima and I are excited to be with you once again. So let's take a look at what's on tap today. Herman Cain suspends his campaign for 2012. Newt Gingrich's comments about the poor. Did he insult poor children? We're going to take a look at what Al Sharpton had to say. There's also some new developments with Bishop Eddie Long. Turns out his wife files for divorce. Also coming up in the second half of the show is Bo Budinski. That's right. The same Bo that was one of the 200 men who appeared on the Oprah show last November. He will be with us today to talk about his experience as a survivor of male abuse, as well as what it's like for him to be a part of this national movement. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention recording artist Petra Luna. She would also be joining us during our second half. So as you can see, we have an all-star cast with us today. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. Now I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And also, I have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old Marbelle, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at our current events. First up, boxing legend Muhammad Ali. I don't know how many of you know about this, but he has been hospitalized after slipping out of consciousness at his Phoenix area home. Now, this is an exclusive report via radioonline.com, and you can see the details there. Or you can also go to our blog, which we frequently cover all types of current events. So, and that's at tailormadetalkradio.blogspot.com. But in a sign, the 69-year-old sports icon is nearing the final round in his three-decade bout with crippling Parkinson's disease. Multiple resources have revealed the champ was rushed from his wife Yolanda's home in Paradise Valley, Arizona, to Scottsdale Healthcare Osborne Medical Center on November the 19th, and paramedics and police have confirmed a 911 call was placed around 6:30 p.m. from a woman at the couple's 6,000-square-foot estate. She stated that an elderly male whose star has independently confirmed was Muhammad Ali. Now, Muhammad Ali is definitely an icon, and our prayers are definitely with him and his family. We are praying for a speedy recovery. Also, next up is Herman Cain. Now, who didn't see this company? I want you to take a listen to what he had to say. Yesterday, of course, he suspended his campaign. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
So one of the first declarations that I want to make to you today is that I am at peace with my God. I am at peace with my wife. And she is at peace with me. I am at peace with my family, and I'm at peace with myself, which is one of the most important things. Now, that being said, becoming president was plan A. And before you get discouraged, today I want to describe plan B. So as of today, with a lot of prayer and soul searching, I am suspending my presidential campaign. I am suspending my presidential campaign because of the continued distraction, the continued hurt caused on me and my family, not because we are not fighters.
Well, I can tell you, I'm a little torn. On the one hand, it has always been pure comedy having him in the race. He would truly be missed in the blogosphere and by media personalities alike. But on the other hand, it was virtually impossible for him to sustain this barrage of allegations, sexual in nature, for an extended period of time, for his character not to be in question. So, you know, good luck, Herman Cain. I know we haven't heard the last of you. Also, up is, of course, Newt Gingrich's disgusting remarks about really poor children. Now, of course, there was a an interesting article by Jonathan Capehart. He wrote a really interesting article in the Washington Post, and it goes something like this. He said that Newt Gingrich, the know-it-all, former Speaker of the House who now rides atop the polls for the Republican nomination for president, has been shooting his mouth off lately. He called himself a celebrity who makes $60,000 a speech. Another favorite is, I helped Ronald Reagan and Jack Kemp developed supply-side economics. I helped lead the effort to defeat communism in the Congress. Now, Jonathan says that I didn't realize communism in Congress was an issue, but I digress. Then a tweet from Charles Blow of the New York Times piqued his interest. There was a retweet, and it says that poor kids don't know work unless it's a crime. And so it just goes to show you that how much Newt Gingrich is of the Republican Party, or for that matter, people that use this type of language is so out of touch with poor people and what they do. And no one better to really talk about this than, of course, Al Sharpton, which is the host of Politics Nation. And I want to take you to take a listen to what Al's comments are. And then we're going to take a break. And after the break, we're going to open up the phone lines, and we're going to discuss these issues. Take a listen to what Al had to say.
Growing outrage over an insult to poor children in this country from the man now leading in the Republican presidential race. Newt Gingrich is standing by his attacks on the poor. In fact, he's repeating them. Here's what he first said.
Really poor children in really poor neighborhoods have no habits of working and have nobody around them who works. They have no habit of, I do this and you give me cash, unless it's illegal.
Poor kids have no habits of working, That's outrageous. But when Newt went on Fox News to explain himself, he didn't back down. He doubled down.
Think about somebody who grows up in a neighborhood where nobody goes to work. They live in a housing project where there are no examples of success. They don't acquire any of the habits.
You should know better than that, Newt. In fact, you do know better. I know because I was there with you. Newt, you and I traveled to inner city schools across the country to promote an education initiative back in 2009. You talk to these kids, Newt. You know they're working hard. You know their parents are working hard. But as I said last night, Newt's not alone. He's repeating the central principle of this mean-spirited Republican Party. Protect the rich, attack the poor.
They're getting unemployment, and they're getting food stamps, and they say, call me when unemployment runs out. We also have to realize there are a lot of people gaming the system right now.
Our nation needs to stop doing for people what they can and should do for themselves. Self-reliance means if anyone will not work, neither should he eat.
If you don't have a job and you're not rich, blame yourself.
Corporations are people, my friend. We can raise taxes, and of course they are.
Republicans can't admit it, but the poor are some of the hardest working people in America. 7.6 million people work more than one job. Nearly 300,000 hold down two full-time jobs. They're working nights and weekends, 80 hours a week or more, just to make ends meet. 4.3 million people earn the federal minimum wage or less. That's $7.25 an hour. That's a yearly salary of $15,000. How do you feed a family with $15,000 a year? How do you feed a family when nobody's hiring? These people are being ridiculed and attacked by the Republican Party. NBC News has been collecting some of their stories all year long. Watch.
Angel was laid off as a building manager. The condo complex where he worked foreclosed.
It's a nightmare.
It's really hard.
We're trying. The main thing that we're trying.
So as you can see, there's a lot of hoopla around Newt Gingrich's comments. And on the other side of the break, we're going to be discussing this. And also on the second half of the show, of course, we're going to have Petra Luna and Bo Budinski coming right up. So. Stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Gema. And Ask Gema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Point.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, in just a few minutes, we're going to open up the phone lines and to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. But first, joining me live in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Okay, so let's get right to it. First up, Herman Cain. Now, he suspended his campaign yesterday, and, of course, it is coming on the, I guess, at the backdrop of all of these sexual allegations, and then most recently this Ginger White allegation. What happened here? And specifically, what do you think happened when he went home to speak with his wife?
Well, what happened is I think Herman Cain was not prepared for the scrutiny of running for the highest office in the land. I don't think that Herman Cain was actually serious about being president based on the strategies of his campaign, where he was having his rallies, quote unquote, were not in the states or cities where the primaries will kick off, such as Iowa and New Hampshire and Florida and North Carolina, South Carolina. I mean, so he was not really playing, in my opinion, the game to win. But I will say what he did do was definitely rebrand himself. He used his book tour, in my opinion, to be his presidential campaign, and allowed himself to probably sell more books than he would have ever sold had he not decided he was going to run for president, quote unquote. I think so. For that matter, he came up. You have to give him his props. He definitely went to the school of Sarah Palin and how to brand yourself, how to market yourself, how to sell your story. He's an excellent speaker, so I'm sure his fees may begin to reach those of what Newt Gingrich fees are, speaking fees of $60,000. So he's done well in that area.
Okay,
as far as suspending his campaign,
mm-hmm.
Well, what else was he going to do? He wasn't in it to win, and I would suspect there was probably going to be more stories to come out. And so instead of trying to make this all be about the liberal media and some sort of Democratic machine out to get him, because I would love nothing more than for Herman Cain to have been the nominee. I mean, I said I would pay for that debate to watch he and President Obama. So that's that. But I think when he went home, I think Ms. Gloria was like, that's it. That's it. No more. I mean, it wasn't a whole lot to say. So she probably just said, you're done.
So let's talk a little bit more about Ginger White. Now, so you think the Ginger White situation was the straw that broke the camel's back, or is it just the culmination of all of these allegations? And was it specifically Ginger White, or was it the culmination of all?
Well, I think Ginger White was probably the final straw because of the personalness of it all, in terms of him admitting to giving her money over this 13-year period. And admittedly that his wife did not know about it, did not know about the relationship, friendship, or whatever it was, and that his wife didn't know he was giving her money. I think that was the final straw, because that just seems kind of like a breach there in a marriage. So
You think he went too? Are you saying he went too far with this one? I mean, because remember the other two women came out. Well, one seemed to think that. I mean, they didn't talk about the details, but the fact that there was a settlement issue, and then most recently the young lady that said Herman put his hand up her skirt and all those things. So, I mean, isn't that too far as well?
Yes. I'm not saying that it's one is that's why I said Ginger's was the final straw, and that, he may could explain away these allegations and making up he didn't know about any settlement, or, trying to use the greatest take on wordsmithing in the entire world, settlement and agreement and all these, how he tried to explain away. He may can explain away somebody's interpretation of, you're the same height as my wife. He can explain that away. You cannot explain away the fact that you have been secretly paying a woman money over a 13-year period, and according to her, traveling across the country. You can't explain that away. And as your wife, you admit that I didn't even know about the relationship, let alone know that you were, you know, giving her money or anything. So I think that was, when I say that was the final straw, that one he couldn't explain away in all of his grandiose words and how he can, you know, convince it, that it's all on the media at the end of the day. That wasn't one he could explain away.
Okay, so let's shift for a moment to the wife. Now, how do you think the conversation went between Herman Cain when he got home and he had to face Glory for the first time about the Ginger White allocation? Because you remember, he went home to have this specific discussion. So what do you think the conversation was like?
I think it was short. I think she said, I don't want to hear it. I've heard enough on what you said to everybody but me. So you getting out the race. You're right. It's going to be up to me, and I've made my decision. You're getting out.
Okay, so basically what I hear then is that the conversation really didn't get a chance to evolve or to be able to explain anything because you think it was Gloria's decision for him to get out of the race as opposed to Herman Cain's decision to get out of the race. I think you're talking on mute. Okay, I think we lost Jima for a second there. We're going to open up the phone lines, and if you want to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to hear what you got to think. When we return, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, we're going to open up the phone lines about Newt Gingrich discussing his remarks about the really poor children. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to shift now to Newt Gingrich. Of course, as I played at the beginning, he talked about poor people. Jim, I want you to weigh in on this. What's going on with Newt?
Who really knows what's going on with Newt, except Newt is his own best friend and his own worst enemy, because he will talk himself in something and talk himself out of something. I was offended, highly offended by his comments, because he made, in my opinion, he made a very broad stroke in terms of painting a picture around poor people, and that all poor people are criminal in nature. And that was offensive to me, because I know a lot of people who struggle every day to make ends meet, and they're not doing anything illegal. And they're doing the best they can to raise their children, to be, you know, upstanding citizens, and for him to paint such a broad stroke. And then, as Reverend Al said, to double down and make the statement as though he's so right. That's what irritates me the most about a lot of those people on the Republican side, is that they tend to speak and they make these comments, and because they say them, it's supposed to be true. And they can come off very condescending. And that's kind of what he did. You know, even his talk on how much he made, you know, his $60,000 he gets per speaking engagement, you know, I think, as I stated, he can talk himself into some things. He can get himself in trouble the same way.
Okay, so this seemed to be consistent rhetoric against poor people. I haven't heard any Democrats say this, so let me caveat by saying the only rhetoric that I hear along these lines is coming from the GOP. So what is it about them that really puts them, I guess, against poor people or against the middle class?
I'm going to say this, and I may be the first one to say it because I believe in calling the elephant in the room an elephant and not a tiger. For me, the elephant in the room is they tend to equate poverty and poor with people of color. And so because they tend to equate poverty and poor with people of color, then the majority of them you hear talking are not of color, with the exception of Herman Cain, who made his statement. So, you know, you have some that are interspersed in there. But for the most part, they, as a party, when they talk about poor or they talk about poverty, they just equate it all to be all people of color, black people or Latinos or anybody that don't look like them. And therein is why they come off so high and mighty, as though, you know, they're doing everybody else a favor by even talking about the matter.
Now, so when we look at the Occupy Wall Street movement, when we look at the people that are out there on the streets, there are a lot of people of color out there that I've seen, at least covered. And it seems to me that they still have the same negative rhetoric geared at that particular group as well. So it seems to me to be a broad brush that they're painting when it comes to poor or middle class people. And then I think it's also indicative of them not really voting on the tax cut right now. So, you know, I'm not real sure what it takes to get the Republican to move in a direction towards, and quite frankly, it's the majority of Americans that is in that particular bucket, as opposed to the ones that are in that 1%. So what do the people, what do we as the people have to do to get them to move in that direction towards supporting the poor and the middle class?
Well, because we don't really pay to have, we can't afford to have the lobbyists there to lobby on the cause of big business and the oil industry and all these companies that have the lobbyists out there that gets the attention of Congress, because those are the people that they're fighting for. And if we look over the fact that in the last 10 years, I think the last report stated, how the number has doubled almost in terms of the number of people in poverty now. You have 1 in 4 children living at or below the poverty line, and yet we're considered to be the richest country in the world, and we are, you know, doing such a bad job of not only addressing the poor, but even admitting that we have a poor problem or that we're in crisis right now. And so the middle class is shrinking because a lot of the jobs that allowed us to become middle class are no longer here. You talk about the auto industry. You talk about those federal jobs, those state jobs, those city and county jobs. Those are the jobs that built the middle class, the auto industry. Those are the jobs that built the middle class. And so when you start downsizing, quote-unquote, government, and you start sending manufacturing jobs overseas, and you are taking a direct – that middle class is taking a direct hit. And so it's shrinking because those jobs are no longer there to provide that foundation for people to be able to get a leg up, so to speak. And so unless those people who – and here's another study that just came out recently about the number of millionaires that are in Congress right now.
Mm-hmm,
it's
mm-hmm.
unbelievable. So, of course, they don't want the Bush tax cuts to expire because they're part of that percent that is getting the most in terms of tax breaks. So they're not going to vote against themselves, not realizing that it's the majority of the people in their districts. They go back to their home districts. Their home districts aren't housing any millionaires. There was a report out about John Boehner's home district. His home district had few people making over $250,000, $300,000, let alone a million. So he's not even taking care of his home district.
So what's interesting is that, you know, it to me is very obvious now that the policies that they're on the side of is really geared towards the 1%. I mean, if you look at the legislation and looking at what they're voting on and looking at what they're voting against, then it's strange to me to see that they continue to stay in office, you know, year after year after year, term after term after term, if their constituents is not really, if they're not doing anything for their constituency. So how is it then that, you know, the people in their district continue to vote them in if they're not doing anything to benefit their livelihood?
Well, I think this is probably going to be 1 year, if not next year's elections, as well as the next midterm, that we might see a shift, because I'm thinking that a lot of people didn't realize how things were actually going on in Washington and what their person was really doing and how their person really had a hand in it. I think sometimes we may have turned a blind eye and thought, oh, that's not my congressman. And when in reality, it's all of them up there. You know, I'm for the push. I mean, not that I agree with a lot of what Rick Perry has to say. Lord knows I don't. But I think there ought to be term limits on people being in Congress. They shouldn't be there for forever. You know, because it's in that time that they're there so long that they get jaded. They may have come there 30 years ago with the right intentions to be there for the people, but 30 years later, they didn't got fat, literally and figuratively. They didn't got bank accounts, and their kids is in private school. And there's just so many things that I don't think we realize in terms of that they get health care for the rest of their lives, that they get all these benefits for the rest of their lives. They get this salary for the rest. That's really? What other job does that? And we have people dying, literally dying, because they don't have health care.
Right,
and these people who are fighting tooth and nail against giving people health care get it for the rest of their lives and their children. So I don't think people, I think there's been some things happening in our government, not just spending. Everybody want to focus on spending. But there are some practices there and some policies and some things that are laws that we really need to take a look at as constituents. We really need to get educated and really begin to push for some things to change. I really think so.
You know, he made a comment, and I want you to get you to comment on this, to respond, rather. He said, really poor children in really poor neighborhoods have no habits of working and have nobody around them who works, so they have no habits of showing up on Monday. What do you make of a statement like that when somebody can that obviously have not lived in that neighborhood, have not grown up or not been reared in those type of situations, can on the outside looking in make those type of blanket statements about a specific class of people?
I think that that's unfortunate that he would say something like that, because once again, he is painting a broad stroke, and he is making a huge assumption about poor people. And as I stated, you know, that might fit for some, but it's definitely not for all. I mean, I responded to a Twitter buddy of mine, Karen Hunter, and she asked the question, is there any truth to it? Well, of course there's some truth to it. Of course there are some kids that are from that type of environment that all they want to do is make the fast buck. We know those type of people. But then you take a look at good times, you know, and if there was ever a working class poor family, James got them to work every day. And yet, you know, we don't want to acknowledge that, you know, people that live in those type of communities, they do have some work ethic. They do. They just are in a bad situation, and we can't paint them all with a broad stroke like that. And that's what he did, and that's what I find to be the most offensive.
Right. He also added that they have no habit of staying all day, and they have no habit of, I do this and you give me cash unless it's illegal. Now, what is he referring to here? What is he trying to say?
Oh, come on, really? What is he referring to? Well, what's illegal? I mean, he's saying that the only way these people that they will go out and work is if they don't have to be there all day, that they don't have to clock in and clock out and come and go as they please. And illegal means on the, you know, on the corner. That's what I took it as. And if he didn't mean that, he could clarify it.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. So, and then again, I'm not real sure, again, why he's painting this broad stroke against poor people as if everybody that's in an unfortunate financial situation is doing this type of activities. So, it's really killing me to see that this particular rhetoric is tolerated from an elected official, or, you know, is trying to get into elected office. And for them to continue to push themselves against the poor people when we're supposed to be in a situation where we're the United States of America. When have we felt that sense of unity in the United States of America?
Well, and then the other problem there also for me is that you have people of color who came to his defense. Michael Steele did, as well as Joe Watkins, who's a Republican strategist. And they came to his defense saying, well, they agree with him in terms of, you know, poor people. But for me, it was the fact that the implications around poor was that it was all about people of color, and negating the fact that, you know, poor, you know, if you look at the statistics of it, that it's not just, you know, black and brown people that are poor. We're living in a time now that so many people fall into that category. And so, but the implication for me was that he was directing it more towards people of color. And so I just found that to be just a tad bit disrespectful to that mother and father that, you know, may not have finished high school or may not have, you know, got all their college, and that they're struggling right now, or even for that family that did do all that, and then the economy took the turn that it did. So now you have people living a lifestyle that they've never lived before. So, you know, when you say poor, you know, there are some people that are poor now that was not poor 10 years ago. And so
right.
They do
absolutely
have work
absolutely
ethic. Yeah. So, you know, it's not as though they don't know how to work, you know, or don't believe in working. So I just think he needs to be a little bit careful in making such statements like that, because he wants to represent the United States, and it's all of us. It's not just the rich. It's just not the white males. It's all of us.
That's correct. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Our phone lines are lighting up. I'm going to go ahead and go to our phone lines right now. And let's see here. Let's go to last four, 7250. You're on with Current Events with Patrick Cook. You have a comment or question. And give us your name, where you're calling from. Last four, 7250. Okay, let's go to our next line. Last four, 6150. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where are you calling from.
This is Bill Murray from Los Angeles. Uh-oh.
Hey, Bill, how are you?
What's up?
Oh, nah, not much. Just waiting, having a good time today. How about yourself?
I can't complain. I hardly ever do.
Good deal. All right.
You know, say that. People say, yeah, you don't complain because it wouldn't do you any good. That's not why I say that. I say that because, yeah, things could be better, but they could be a whole lot worse, too.
Awesome.
You know, mm-hmm. I'm one of those poor white guys. I don't act like I'm poor, though. I act like I'm a philanthropist. You know, I give everything away, and I haven't been employed, really employed for years. And, you know, we're all in the same boat. You know, I'm sure I live at the poverty level, but I live deliberately simple so that I can do that and yet still give it away. You know?
Right. Definitely understand. Okay. All right. Thank you for that comment. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to bring on our host, our guest here shortly. Now, I don't know if you remember this, but last November, Oprah held a landmark show that had never been done before. Now, Oprah hosted 200 men who were courageously stood together to reveal they were all molested. Now, although the topic is taboo for many people, since that time, many young boys and men have come out against their alleged predators to speak out. Most notably in the Penn State, Syracuse, and not too long ago with Bishop Eddie Long. Now, today, our very special guest is Bo Budinski. Now, Bo was one of the 200 men who appeared on Oprah, and he will be with us today about his experience and as a survivor, as well as what it was like for him to appear on the Oprah show and how it is for him to be a part of this major national movement. I want you to take a listen to what he had to say.
Hi, my name is Bo Budinski, and I'm a male survivor of sexual abuse. I'd like to talk to you for a minute about that. As many as 1 in 6 men is a victim of childhood sexual abuse. That's men, not women. I'm one of those men, and my life has been profoundly affected. I was violated by 3 family members, 2 local businessmen, a family friend, a neighbor, a serial pedophile, a 21-year-old woman who thought it was cool to have a 15-year-old boy toy, and then by the psychiatrist I was taken to when I began to act out in elementary school. They picked this man because he was not only a prominent member of our community, but he also took care of all us young acolytes in the church where I grew up. I'm going to save you any more details, but rest assured that my childhood and my life is the stuff that books and movies are about. As a result of the abuse, the lens I look out of to see the world is stained with a deep sense of shame and worthlessness. I've had to deal with addiction, shattered relationships, abandoned careers, I've been homeless, the list goes on and on. But I have to tell you, the worst is grief. There's a grief and a sadness beyond description. Because you see, I've had to grieve the loss of this precious little guy right here and the life that could have been. However, I am a survivor, and as such, I've developed many skills and tools to deal with this over the years. I've worked very hard at that. I'll be the first to tell you that I've stumbled and fallen many, many times along the way, but there's always been a voice telling me to get back up. I've always known that there was a reason. I just didn't know what it was. Well, I got my answer not too long ago. Last September, I found out that Oprah was going to do a show on male survivors and that she wanted 200 men to be a part of that show. So I submitted my story to Harpo Productions, and I was blessed to be one of those that was selected. Now, that is not the important point. The important point is that in the writing of my story, the lights finally came on. I finally got it, what this was all about. It became perfectly clear to me that my struggle all these years was about the business of getting me ready to do exactly what I'm doing right now. That's to be the voice for people who've not found theirs, to show that there is hope, and more personal to my own experience, to encourage people to never, ever give up, no matter how dark the journey gets. And my journey got very, very dark. And do not quit 5 minutes before the miracle. I didn't quit. I'm 61 years old, and my life has been one miracle after another since then. The miracles even started in the plane on the way home from Chicago. I was sitting next to this wonderful little old prim and proper lady, and I suppose she saw some of my paperwork laying out with Harpo Productions on it. At any rate, she finally got up the guts to ask me. She said, "Bo, were you on Oprah?" And I said, "Yeah." And then she looked at me. She said, "Are you a star?" And I told her no, and that I wouldn't wish on anyone how I got to be on Oprah. And then I made this split-second decision to tell her exactly and precisely what the show was about. Well, there was dead silence. You could have heard a pin drop for an excruciatingly long period of time. Then after a while, she turned and a deeply saddened look in her face, and she said in her little voice, she said, "You know, I think that's been happening to my granddaughter. Now maybe I can say something about that." I still get chills every time I tell that story. But the important point about that is if this little old lady can summon the strength and the courage to say something about it, then you and I really don't have an excuse, do we? See, what's at stake here is the preciousness and innocence of a wonderful little child. And I'm going to talk about it. What are you going to do?
Now, on the other side of the break, you're going to be getting an opportunity to hear Bo's story for yourself. And maybe ask him some questions about this. This is a very serious topic. We want to make sure that we take advantage of this opportunity to talk to someone who has the experience, who is a survivor, who understands what these type of victims go through, and especially in light of what happened at Penn State and Syracuse and all around the United States. We know this is happening more and more. At least people are beginning to come out. And so on the other side of the break, we're gonna have an opportunity to talk to Bo, and also we're gonna be talking to Petra Loon, and I'm also gonna introduce you to her for those of you that do not know her. So you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, be sure to check out our blog also, and that's at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade TalkRadio.blogspot.com. This is where you will find a unique perspective and stimulating commentary on the current events. I invite you to check that out and stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Gema. And Ask Gema says, "Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Boone friend."
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com.
Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, in just a few minutes, we're going to have our very special guest, Bo Budinski, join us, and we're going to listen to all the good things he has to say. And also, joining us shortly is going to be Petra Luna. Now, for those of you that don't know, Petra Luna and I started doing this annual male abuse awareness last year. And so, you know, for the last couple of years, we've been doing this show. And last year, we had a clinician from Australia on the show, and she provided some insight and some guidance and things of that nature, and offered opportunities for people to actually come out and that may have been affected by this particular situation. So, and this year, she got with me again for our second year. And so, I'm so excited to be able to provide a voice to this particular issue, because obviously it is now starting to gain a lot of traction, but Petra has been in the fight for a long time, and so has Bo. Now, for those of you that don't know, now Petra Luna is a public figure who is a professional musician by trade, but much more to her beloved fans and followers, she has become one of the matriarchs of her cause to fight child abuse, as well as one of the cause's most recognized faces. Now, she's an exemplary survivor of all forms of abuse. She inspires thousands of people to unite in the name of her cause. She also encourages victims of abuse to seek help, justice, and recovery through her music and nonprofit organization she calls the P. Luna Foundation. So I would encourage you to go out there to the P. Luna Foundation to find out more about that. But in the meantime, when she's going to be joining us here in a few minutes, I don't see her on the line yet. We're going to go ahead and bring Bo on the line. Bo, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
It is indeed a pleasure to have you join us today to talk about such a very important topic. And I know a lot of people want to hear about your Oprah experience, and I'm sure we would eventually get around to talking about that. But first, tell us your story.
Well, I started being sexually abused even pre-memory, Patrick, and so the setup for me was one such that I didn't even know that you could say or do anything about it, because it was just conditioning for me. You know, I had 10 perpetrators by the time I was 18 years old. And I tell you what, that sent me into a life of shame and running and craziness that has only started to make sense in the last, 12 or 18 months. I changed high schools when I was 16. I was already wrong. I didn't know why I changed, and I didn't know why I needed to get away, but I knew that I did. And I'm just now reuniting with some of those people after 45 years.
Wow.
Then I went to one college, then I went to another, then I moved to Dallas, then Las Vegas, then Los Angeles, then Phoenix, then Palm Springs. Yeah. So I've been running my entire life and ashamed, and I didn't know why. Now I do. And you know, it's been a life. I've had a lot of struggles. You know, I've had a lot of busted relationships. I've dealt with addiction. I've walked off and left homes, careers. I've been homeless. It's been a ride. But through all of that, and as it says in my bio, there's always been a voice inside me telling me to get back up, and that one day somehow that I would know the reason. You know, I've always known, I've never doubted it in my darkest hour, that there was something going to come of this for me. It took 61 years, but looking back, I wouldn't change a thing. Yeah.
Wow. I want to kind of take a look at a couple of different dimensions, and I'm sure you've addressed these before, but I want to kind of put them in a context of three layers: physical abuse, mentally, mental abuse, and emotional abuse. And because I think those three layers of what works or what drives the root of an individual. So first, how did the physical abuse affect you?
You mean the physical sexual abuse?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, it breaks you. It just breaks you. It's a total boundary violation. You even though you don't know it, you don't own you anymore. And that's why so many young people are prone to repetitive violations, because they, you know, their sense of boundaries is gone, and the perps know exactly what to look for. So and it also sets you up to be pretty much a victim. If and until you can ever get your wits about you and find recovery and do something about it. You know, it's just like you walk around life a victim, and things continue to happen to you. And it's just, you know, that part of it is torturous. And you don't know why. It's like, I've always known I was a wonderful, good person, but I just, you know, I felt like a screw up, and you know, I would self-destruct regularly, you know. So it's really crazy making.
Wow. I know there's a Petra Luna has a website out there, the P. Luna Foundation I talked about earlier, and she has out there the 11 reasons why males don't disclose abuse, specifically sexual abuse. And the first two things on the site says a cultural bias maintains that males cannot be victims. Males are expected to be confident, knowledgeable, and aggressive. To be a victim means one is inadequate male. If the boy's body has responded sexually, he feels he is somehow responsible for the sexual abuse. So in that particular physical context of the conversation that we're talking about, did you have similar type of feelings or towards that behavior when you were physically abused in that manner?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Later on, though, when I was very, very young, you know, up through you know, till I'd say after puberty, well, you know, I just wasn't aware enough of my body and what it was supposed to do or not to do. But after I knew that, yes, you know, my feeling of was one of complicity, because you know, men, kind of, you know, different from women, our bodies will betray us.
Okay.
You know, and so we feel like, oh gosh, I'm, you know, I'm getting an erection. This is feeling good. Da 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 da. And then so at that point, males start feeling complicit and like they're a part of it and enjoying it. And very often, the perpetrators are people in the family system that don't want that out. We'll say, we'll see what happened to you. You enjoyed it. You were part of it. You took part of it. You know, so on and so forth. So it's a real setup.
Mm-hmm. So let's now shift to the mental issues that may have you been affected by. So in your mind, how did you handle the mental aspects of being sexually abused?
Well, you know, what I did and what so many survivors, victims do is they go away, so to speak, in one form or another. My choice was drugs and alcohol during some periods. And I still have trouble with eating, overeating. I've been a workaholic. What we do typically is choose something to not feel our feelings and not feel our pain and shame. Some people are way underachievers. Some go way the other way and way overachievers. And both serve to dull the senses, numb the pain, and take us out of that hellish bondage that we suffer emotionally. And, you know, quite often we can't identify it. We just don't know. And that, again, is part of the setup.
Right. So then finally, the emotional part. You talked about shame. How did this particular abuse affect you emotionally? And then talk about it in the context of the years, right? Because if this happened to you a long, long time ago, obviously, as you aged and matured, you become stronger and more assertive in where you are now. So kind of walk us through that particular life cycle of your emotional state as you matured.
Well, I'm not sure. I may need to ask you to re-ask that question. I'm not sure exactly where you want me to go with this.
Well, I was just looking at the fact that, you know, emotionally when you were a young person and you was being sexually abused and where you were emotionally, and where you talked about the drugs, was that early on in your life or was that later on? So emotionally, how did you feel in the different stages of your life?
Okay, yeah, I'm with you now. I started acting out. Oh gosh, I guess when I was around 10, by 12, I was already. I wouldn't say I was an alcoholic, but I was abusing alcohol. I was, my grades dropped. My conduct changed drastically. I was very angry. I really lashed out at a lot. And a lot of confusion. A lot of it's just confusion. And I think probably one thing stays constant over the years. It's a sense of a deep sense of worthlessness that just never goes away. You know, I can put on the game face and have all my life, and but down inside, the voices are going, you don't really belong here. You don't really deserve this.
Wow.
They don't really think much of you. And right. but you know, we live in a society kind of, as you hit on earlier, to where we've got to be out there and show up and, you know, paste a smile on. And that's what a lot of survivors do. And they're just absolutely dying inside emotionally. You know, GQ public doesn't see it, but oh boy, our insides are cratering.
Wow. So you know, obviously we live in a different time now. Again, I'm so thankful that you and Petra Luna and all of the people that have been fighting this cause is now. I think more of you all are being heard now, and so young people across the country are now starting to come out. I mean, it's obvious based on the Penn State scandal, what's happening recently in Syracuse now. But I want to kind of turn the clock back now to when this all happened to you. And I want to ask you, what type of outrage did you have? What kind of help? I mean, who could you go to when this was happening to you back then?
Well, that's a very important question, and I'm glad we're on that. Back then, of course, you know, this was I was born in 1950. So when I began to start exhibiting signs, I was 8 or 10 years old, and that was 58, 60, and we just did not have the awareness. I had a blessed, wonderful teacher. He was my art teacher, and I was about 10 years old, and I'll never forget it. I started drawing very bizarre, very graphic, horrific scenes of violence and blood and just horrific art. It would really got you, and I happen to be a good artist, so that really got his attention. He knew something was going on, so he called attention to that to my mother, and thus, you know, we of course these days people are in tune because of the media. Just like you said, people are in tune to, well, this may be sexual abuse, and that's what we're here for, doing this show for. Back then, all he knew was that there was something bizarre happening with me, and he should contact my mom. Well, that led to, and this is a huge part of my story. This is a pivotal part of my story. Then at that point, I was taken to a psychiatrist that was picked out of the church I was raised in. This man knew exactly where to go, where to be, and the pickings were ripe. He also, I put in quotation marks, he took care of all us young acolytes at the church where I was. So he was grooming. And I know I may be getting a little bit off the subject, but I want to put this out there because, you know, this is what groomers do. This was a psychiatrist prominent in the community, had himself embedded in the church to take care of the young acolytes. So I was taken to him, and he was another abuser of mine. You know, this guy of my, you know, of everyone out there should have been able to be trusted. Well,
right.
That's what happened then. Now, you know, we've got enough awareness, thank goodness. And you know, thank God that the spotlight is on us right now. You know, I tell some of my friends I seldom sit on the sidelines and cheer on a media feeding frenzy, but I'm on the sidelines cheering this one on right now because it gets us attention. And right. I want to mention a little bit about Oprah in this, too. You know, she did for us men with the 200 Men show last year. What she did for women, 20 years ago, as far as raising awareness for sexual abuse, women's mm-hmm. sexual abuse. And women have continued to talk about that, and the interest and awareness and help has increased. Men, by their nature, are not like that. So Oprah opened the door for us men last November, a year ago. But if there are not men like me and women like Petra who will beat the drums and have a devil-may-care attitude and just be an in-your-face advocate, that door is going to close for men.
Mm-hmm.
It is men's nature. And that's why I am so privileged to be here on the show and to be able to talk about, you know, exactly what we're talking about. And by so doing, with these type of shows with the media, men are coming out at an exponential rate. I see it every day.
Right.
And God bless, you know, that's what we're here for. Because it's a torturous life, Patrick.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy.
Right. Well, we also, you mentioned Petra, and we do have her on the line. Petra, you with us?
Yes, can you hear me?
We can. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you
for
having me. Well, as I mentioned earlier, Petra has been on the front lines for a long time. And I even Facebooked her and told her that finally now the general population, the general public is now starting to understand what you've been talking about for many, many years. So, Petra, let's tell the listening audience a little bit about you and about your cause and what you've been doing.
Well, if you want to read my testimony, it's at petraluna.com, PetraLuna.com. Just go to the biography. I'm a survivor of all forms of abuse. And what inspired me to, you know, my first inspiration to go into helping young males was my own brother, who was a victim of not only physical and emotional abuse, but he was also, you know, sexually molested by a babysitter's son. And, you know, when I was trying to come up and get over, you know, everything that had happened to me, including my own sexual abuse and, you know, everything that happened, I had a lot of services available to me. There was everybody you could possibly imagine reaching out to me. But what I witnessed with my brother was, you know, he had a hard time getting anybody to even believe him. You know, and I could see him, he was broken and depressed and suicidal, and there just wasn't services available for him. There wasn't people that wanted to even, like, acknowledge him. And, you know, that was the first inspiration to, you know, start, you know, helping males and, you know, trying to break a cycle of abuse, which is a very hard topic, you know. And as I'm preparing my speech for my first annual fundraising event and educational event tomorrow night, you know, I was talking about that very thing. And, you know, even police will say, well, you know, if a guy's been sexually abused, you got to be real careful, you know, because, you know, be careful, watch him, he might become an abuser. But, you know, and not all guys become abusers who were abused. But there is hard evidence that there is a cycle of abuse. You know, and it's a hard thing to say. The men are like, well, we're already victimized. Well, how can you point a finger? But for us to not say that, okay, a percentage of you are going to become abusers, whether you become wife beaters or abusers or, you know, whether you decide to go into violent crime or drug abuse, I mean, there is a percentage of, you know, both brothers in suffering that are going to go down that path, and that's where we come in to try to break that cycle and, you know, give them hope for a happier future. We need healthy men in our society. We need need healthy fathers, we need healthy husbands and leaders, and, you know, that's just kind of a little nugget of, you know, what's going on and what's in my mind. And, you know, Bo had approached me a few months ago when I started promoting this campaign, and I was so blessed, you know, and he and I just seem to, like, you know, have a meeting of the minds. We agree on a lot of things, and, you know, I hope to bring him closer into my foundation this year. But when I asked him to do your show, he was gung-ho, and he's, you know, doing a lot of great promoting for Male Abuse Awareness Week, and, you know, we want this to be a, you know, a major cause campaign, and we're just going to keep plugging away until we get there, you know, Patrick.
Awesome, awesome. So, Bo, I want to bring you back on for a minute. Your line is open, too, as well. I want to ask you about the predatory signs. Obviously, being a victim and being a survivor, you understand now kind of what to look for. So can you kind of tell the listening audience what are some of the things that may try to – that predator predators do to try to lure young men in?
Well, yeah, one, they, you know, like I was saying earlier, they put themselves in places where children are going to be. And, you know, they're, you know, they can spot a child in a crowd of thousands that's vulnerable.
Yeah.
They befriend the family many times. They'll insert themselves in a position of trust or power. You know, they'll be very friendly. Then they'll begin to get you accustomed to minor, I want to say boundary violations. If your parents are telling you that something's not right, well,
right.
The perp will get you by yourself. Well, that's not so bad. Or if your parents won't give you ice cream, the perp will get you by himself. Oh, it's
mm-hmm.
You can have ice cream with me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just breaking them down and gaining the trust, violating the boundaries, and then one thing leads to another. And, that, you know, they're professionals. Sometimes they'll hang in there for a year or two to get where they want to be. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's incredible. Yeah.
Can I add something?
Sure.
Sure.
You know, they're – a child predator is going to try to separate you from your child. You know, there's no such thing as free music lessons. There are no free babysitters. People that are going to offer to do that kind of stuff want to separate you from your child. At no point does somebody want to separate you without supervision of your child.
Mm-hmm.
That is a clear cut, you know, and a man that's displaced. I mean, if he doesn't have any children and he's hanging around children all the time, you know, that's another sign, don't you think, Bo?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. You know, I even had one family member that was a perpetrator, and you know, he was very, I would say, asexual, and you know, never had a wife, never married, da da da. But boy, he wanted to wave the banners and take all the children here and there, and oh, he can stay with me, and there was always money given to you for Christmas or whatever. You know, it's like a pack, you know, a wolf, you know, picking out sheep from the pack. You know, that's what they do. That's what they
wow.
do all day
yeah.
long. Yeah.
Offering like video games to you, offering things that your parents can't afford to give you. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying? Doing favors for you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We're going to open up the phone lines now, and Bo and Petra, stay around. We want you to answer some questions from our listening audience. Okay, so let's go to last 4-3-7-3-2. Give us your name and where you're calling from. You're on the air with Current Events with Patrick Cook.
This is Mr. Motivator, the comedian here in Dallas.
Hey, welcome to the show. You have a comment or a question?
Oh, thank you. A little bit of both. I just really want to thank you for having such a informative show, and I enjoy all of your shows. They're very dynamic, and I thank all of your guests because, you know, this is not an easy subject for men to really even talk about because men just don't talk about these kinds of things. And my question for you or your guest is, what can you do if if a person runs into a young man who may have experienced something like that or may be experiencing, what would be the best thing to do to handle a delicate situation like that?
Hey, Bo, would you address that, please?
Yeah, the first thing that you do is say, I believe you. That's first and foremost. You believe them. You know, you don't say, well, if this, should have that, whatever. I believe you, and I'm going to see what I can do to get you the help that you need or get going in the right direction. But that position of trust right there is the most important thing you can do.
Bo, that's interesting that you would say that. I mean, you didn't talk about, you know, going out and, you know, pointing fingers. You didn't say, why did this happen? You said you took the time to address listening to the particular, to the potential victim. So kind of stress the importance of establishing that first line of opening line of communication there.
Well, you know, that's critical. I mean, because it's such a sensitive issue, and a young man who is in that position, if he has the awareness to know that something yucky has happened and bad is that, you know, chances are he's also in a system that's telling you don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. If you do that, I mean, there are even threats of violence.
Right.
You know,
right.
If you tell anybody, I'll kill so and so or this and that and other. So what you want to do is make a safe, trusting environment for the person that's coming forward and let them know that there is help available. You don't want to say, oh, we're going to go do this and I'm going to take you there. It's just plain, I believe you and I'm going to see what I can do to help you.
Awesome. Patrick, do you have anything to add?
Well, yeah, it might not be so easy to get them to talk because, as you can see, especially with the Syracuse thing, you know, they might have told somebody who won't do anything about it because they want to protect their marriage or their lifestyle or, you know what I'm saying? It might not be that easy to get them to talk. Like that woman at Syracuse, I mean, she didn't want to mess up her paycheck and her lifestyle and her husband's, you know, future. I mean, she knew about it. She kept letting it going on. And, you know, and this kid, I mean, people around her might know about it already. You know, so it might not be as easy to pull it out of them because they've already been, you know what I'm saying? So you have to be very patient. That's my advice, is be very patient and give them time. Eventually, they
right.
could open up to you.
Right. Well, thank you, Mr. Motivated, for that. Let's go to another caller here. Caller, last four, 6150. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Do you have a comment or a question? Okay, let's move to the next one here. Let's go to last four, 8625.
Professor Cook.
Hey, how's it going?
This is your biggest fan, Reverend Darrell.
Hey, Reverend Darrell, how are you?
Well, I'm doing all right. I'm doing better. How about you, sir?
Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, and we got Petra on the phone. I mean, that's great.
Right. You have a comment or a question, Darrell?
Yeah. I'm writing a blog now. I got a comment. You know, I'm with the Pig Lillian Foundation. I'm writing a blog now that's called Ironic, and it's I'll be posting it soon. And I'll post it to your page as well. But I've been listening to some of the callers, and you know, the abuse that I went through as a child, as a male, set me up as well to be vulnerable and to be a target of abuse. But it does affect you all your life. If you don't get help early on in life, and you wait until you're, you know, like I am, I'm 50 years old to start seeking abuse for that particular issue, then it's going to be very difficult to sort out the, all the aspects of the abuse and what it's done to your life. And the the point behind the blog, ironic, is that everything that has led up, you know, I the first 6 months of this year, or 7 months or so, and I worked really hard trying to keep things going, you know, with my end, which is, you know, part of it is, you know, the male abuse awareness and support. And because of the effects that the abuse has had on my life and my health, I mean, my physical health, my emotional health, I started to bog down and get caught up in just too much. And the thing that's ironic is that I was not even able to participate in promoting this Male Abuse Awareness Week because my health had gotten in such bad shape, you know. And, you know, I feel like it is directly related to my childhood abuse. So, I mean, it affects you a lot of ways.
You know, it's okay. I mean, you know, it's okay. You told me you were sick, and, you know, just by you coming on the show today, you're letting people know, which is the essence of Male Abuse Awareness Week, is get help while you're younger. So, you know, you don't have trouble like this, you know, today. So by actually calling in today, you are helping. So, you know, nobody is, you know, disappointed in any way.
And Petra, I realize that, and I'll cut it short here, but I realize that, and I didn't have any concerns whatsoever because I know that you understand this, and I really appreciate you and your support and all that you do. And anyway, but thanks a lot, and I'm listening still, and thanks to both you and Bo and everybody that's speaking out. God bless you, and going forward, I mean, I'm, you know, hopefully be more involved here. So
thanks for
again.
Calling in. That was a big help, Daryl. That was a big help calling in. Thank you for calling in.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right, Rep. Dad, we appreciate it. We're gonna go to another caller here. Last 46150. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
It's Bill Murray from Los Angeles. Hi, Patrick.
Hey.
Oh my God. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Bo. You're terrific, and I wanted to call in to support you and what you're doing. And of course, what a pleasant surprise to find Petra here too.
Oh, great!
The event that Petra's sponsoring tomorrow night is, you know, lining. It's a sold out event, by the way. Very popular thing. But you know what, Petra, you may not know this, but the Dreamcrafters organization is carrying an article about your event on the front page of their site, on their newsletter right now. And so
That's awesome. It's
getting out there, you know, through Facebook and so forth, and a few things that have been posted about it. So
Go ahead, Bill.
Well, I'm just delighted to being able to play a small role in helping you help everybody else.
You know what? It's ironic because Bo and Bill, you know, Bill has had a very horrible, similar background to you, Bo. He, you could tell him a little more than me, Bill, but you were, you know, they put you in child, you said you they put you in child pornography. Is that what happened to you?
Oh yeah, that was I was a victim of years and years of molestation, all at the hands of men, none of which were family members. Some were religious, some were lay people. I was kidnapped for a couple of weeks at one point, and I was also the victim of thousands of photographic images being taken of me over a 3-year period at one point. You know, and you grow up with that embarrassment. Bo and I do know each other. In fact, I have his video, the one we heard the audio from the earlier on the show here, and I was so impressed by his presentation that I put it on our website, and it's actually featured under the recovery button on the website that we run at NASCA. So Bo and I do know each other, but he doesn't know my story. I haven't done what he's done.
Now Bill is going to be the guest speaker at our event tomorrow night. So he's going to drive all the way down Thank you for doing that. He also has his own radio show now. Now, Carl was on that show with Bo. Am I correct with that?
Carl was on the Carl Hart, who's a volunteer with the organization that I founded at the beginning of this year, was also one of the 200 guys that appeared on the Oprah show. And we've had various other members of the 200 men as well, so we have a pretty good following from that group of guys. I had begun telling my show prior to it, but I had not heard about the Oprah appearance. I did not appear on it. But I am part of the group that follows what the ramifications have, you know, the publicity and so forth that have followed it, and I'm delighted to support them in any way I can, of course.
That's great.
Great. Well, Bill, we really appreciate you calling in. We're going to go to our next caller now, and that caller is last 44694. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where are you calling from?
How you doing, guys? Julian. I'm from Williamstown, New Jersey.
All right, Julian.
Williamstown, not too far from Penn State, actually, over to Thanksgiving. Hey, Bo, how you doing? Thanks for inviting me.
Good.
I was on the Oprah too. I was number 200, I think.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, that was an awesome experience.
We have a 200 men reunion for Male Abuse Awareness Week one of these years. I swear we got to do that one of these. Bo, we got to do that one of these years.
That would be awesome. Yeah,
definitely a good thought. Thanksgiving weekend, I went on foot to State College, Pennsylvania, Penn State. Mm-hmm. I walked 60. It's about 200 miles from my house. I walked 60 miles of it, and I had a sign on the back of my a poster board I got from Michaels or whatever it is there. It says, "Don't rape our boys." It was a good experience. The first person I met shared with me, "I was molested as a child." And he said to me, "I don't feel normal." And I said, "You're normal." And I said, "But what happened to you was not normal." The first person I met on that journey.
Wow.
I was able to start my healing back in 05. I was abducted and raped as an 8-year-old by a stranger. So that no doubt affected my life. But the closer I got to Penn State, I tell you, it started getting a little ugly. People mm-hmm. started giving me bad looks and just the bad vibes, you know. That whole culture, it's sick. It's sick with what's going on here. But I've been to 3 or 4 male survivors. I've been to Mike Liu's workshops over here in Bangor, Pennsylvania. So it's an ongoing process, and I'm glad you're out there, Bo.
Oh, thanks very much. Thank you for doing what you do as well. It takes all of us.
It was
awesome. I wish I could tell you more of the story. I met so many different people. Walking on top of them mountains going to State College was tough, but I tell you, it gave me time to be with myself. And actually, a couple picked me up, believe it or not, a young couple picked me up with a baby. They picked me up on top of this mountain because they were afraid I was going to get attacked by these fishers. But anyway, it was a great experience, and I'm ready to go down to my local Catholic church and say raping children is evil. I don't care what anybody says,
right,
if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you heard about the rhetoric coming out of certain places, but raping children is evil. There's no way around it.
Yeah. Well, Julian, we thank you for your call. Just to stay on the line, and we'll open your mic up here shortly again. So I want to shift now back to Bo for a second. Bo, I want to kind of ask you, what was the turning point in this particular process? You were being abused, you were victim of being abused, and all of a sudden, what happened that made you say, enough is enough?
Well, that just happened, you know, last year. I've known my whole life that something was very wrong. I just, you know, I didn't fit. I continued to self-destruct. But I always, you know, there's an old proverb that says, fall 8 times, get up 9, or fall 7, get up 8. I forget too. And that's what I've done all my life, and I've always known that there was a reason. Like I said, I can't stress that enough. So and all of the groups I've been in and therapy I've done and all of that, I never had written my story from the perspective of like a timeline of my sexual abuse. And when I did that to submit to Harpo Productions, it was like my whole life came together, and it was just like the biggest aha moment. It's like, wow, no wonder, you know.
Wow.
It was a true epiphany, and it's like all of the hard work that I've done all of these years. And don't get me wrong, I've had trouble with addiction and this and that and other, but I've had many, many more good years than I have bad. But I would just keep self-destructing. So it was like all of the work, all of the struggle, everything came together at that one point, and it's like, wow, okay, I don't have to run. I don't have to be ashamed. I can just be who I am, and that's enough. So that's what happened. But it took, like I said, it took 61 years. And I want to throw in, too, you know, when I mentioned earlier that they took me to a psychiatrist, and this is one of the reasons why I'm so happy to participate with Petra and the P. Luna Foundation, is, like I was saying earlier, there was not the awareness. Although my teacher back there when I was 8 or 10 years old knew something was wrong, there was not the awareness. Now there is. And now if we can get people in place like Petra and her foundation and the P. Luna Foundation is trying to do, then we have the awareness to get with kids like myself when they first are being noticed, when their behavior changes, when, you know, at the very first sign. And I'm convinced, had the right help and the awareness been available to me at that time, I would not have had five decades full of struggle. I would have been able, with the awareness that we have now, been able to live a much more productive and a whole lot less torturous life. So.
Right. So we talked earlier about the fact that the resources were not available for you back then. You say you were born in 1950, and these things occurred 8 years, 9 years, 10 years later. And so in the early 60s, that there were not this type of resource. Now there are resources. And so, Petra, I want for you to talk a little bit about the resources that you know are available specifically for male abuse victims, as well as what resources are available through the P. Luna Foundation.
Well, before I touch on that, I want to say something, reiterate on something that Bo said, and it was just so important, it struck a note with me. When he said that he actually wrote down what happened, that was the exact thing that happened with me. When I came to the revelation that, you know, I had three people, you know, grooming me and raping me from the age of 11 to 14, and it wasn't until I was older and I actually wrote it down. I started from the beginning of what they started doing to me, and as I wrote that, and I kept going back to the computer and writing it, it was the same thing. Once you write it down, you can see it. That's a great way to get it out. You know, get it out. But anyway, I'm going back to services. Okay, help4guys.org, help4guys.org. Go to the services page, okay, male services. Every service you could possibly find on the internet that has a website or offers services, you know, are going to be listed there. You know, even the top ones who, thank God, have reached out to me this year and congratulated me on the Male Abuse Awareness Campaign, 1 in 6, malesurvivor.org. They sent me some kudos, some respect this year. Okay, that was hard to get people to recognize because, you know, they thought I wasn't serious at first. But now I think that they understand that, you know, this is a serious cause, male abuse awareness. But, yes, you can find, you know, my website is a hub. You can find services, you know, everywhere. And we're developing a program right now. We're trying to get the funding for it and get it set up and get it started where we can provide confidential online therapy to young men between 18 and 30, which is the hardest group of guys to get to therapy. But, you know, I'm not going to give up on these young guys. And if we can get them confidential therapy, you know, because secrecy is everything to them, you know, I think that this program could work and get more males into therapy.
Right. All right, we're going to go back to our phone lines now. We have a caller, let's see here, last four, 0058. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from. Last four, 0058.
Am I on?
Yes, you're on.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. Anyway, my name's Jack, and I live in Hampton, Virginia, and I just want to say I really appreciate you having a show like this. I just got an invite from a Facebook friend and another male survivor, and anyway, I'm just now over the last couple of years coming to terms with my sexual abuse. I'm 47 now, and I just want to say, basically, I find that as I've connected with so many more survivors, I'm part of a local support group here called Survivors Not Victims, but I find that it seems that when you get older, like the midlife crisis ages, I guess.
Be careful now. Be careful with that.
the fact that sexual child abuse really seem to manifest themselves, so many more years later, for myself it did. And fact is, it's embarrassing to say, but I ended up in a weekend spiritual retreat in a psychiatric ward because of really coming to terms with everything. And with the impact when the realization of really identifying myself as a rape victim from the ages of 10 to 14, it was just very, very traumatic to me. Just a little bit. My oldest brother, he was like, Jack, this has affected you for way too long. And this was like July of last year. And he was like, we're going to go get you some help. And he took me to a lawyer, and I told my story really in a little bit more detail than I've ever said it before. And then he took me to the police station. And for the very first time, I sat in a police station, and I recounted my story. They videotaped it. And I had to give the nitty-gritty, in-color, living details of the last time that it took place. And it all came out. And, it just really broke me down. And, as a fairly intelligent individual, it just... When I came out of that experience, having to go to a psych ward, just the reality of it really, really hit me and made me really determined that I'm going to be a vocal voice in my community and do everything that I can to help other male survivors and, women too. I mean, we go through...
What is your name? So what is your name?
Oh, my name's Jack.
Jack, do me a favor, go to helpforguys.org and hit the contact page and fill out the contact form. Send me an email. I want to send you a free T-shirt, a Mom Man T-shirt, because your story has, you've inspired me, and I think you're very brave, and I want to send you, one of the callers is going to win a gift today, and I just want to give you that gift, but you have to contact me, okay? Fill out the contact form at helperguys.org. I'm going to send you a my man T-shirt, okay? Because you're a brave guy, and that's a great story.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate it.
You know, it seems like a consistent theme that's running through the conversation today, and it's about writing it down or getting the information outside of you. So sometimes we keep these things pinned up inside of us, and we really don't understand the power that it has over us by us keeping it in. But it's obvious to me, just listening to the conversation from Bo and from Petra and now Jack, that when you get the information out, it seems to be able to give you the power back. It seems like you can regain the power. Bo, do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. There's just magic in the pen. There's magic in sharing. I've just been sitting here reflecting, too, on what was the last caller's name again? I forgot.
His name was Jack.
Jack. I have frequented psych wards. You know, I've been there. And then reflecting back, and again, going back to what the P. Luna Foundation is doing, had even when I started recovery for addiction in 76, had there been people back then, see, that's a huge sign. And now that I've been there, that's part of, I know I'm going round and round on this, but having been there, one of my passions is spotting signs with people early in recovery or, you know, if they're in a psych ward, if they're getting in trouble with drugs, if their relationships are falling apart, you know, if they're troubled and oh my, if, you know, if even I would have gotten the help back then, even at age 26, when I knew something was wrong and I really started seeking help on my own, you know, again, I just have to keep going back to that, you know, and having somebody on the other end telling you that it's okay to talk or suggesting, why don't you write? You know, that's where the freedom is, and that is why I do what I do all day, every day. I mean, it's hard to be a victim when you've got your hand held out to somebody all day long. You know, it's just awesome. So.
Absolutely. You know, I want to read. We've been talking about, and in fact, I'm gonna consider you three celebrities too. So don't take offense to that, but I think you are in that particular light. But there's another celebrity as well that's been talking about this issue, and that's Tyler Perry. And most recently, he wrote an open letter to Penn State to the 11-year-old. I want to read that. And Petra and Bo, I want to get you to respond. In the letter, okay, he writes, I don't know your name, but I know your face. I don't know your journey, but I know where you are. I am your brother. I must tell you, what you have done is so courageous. The strength that it must have taken for you, your 11-year-old voice, to speak out about such a horrible act is something that I didn't have the strength or courage to do at that age. I was very poor, young black boy in New Orleans, just a face without a name, swimming in a sea of poverty, trying to survive. Forget about living. I was just trying to exist. I was enduring a lot of the same things that you've come forward and said happened to you. And it was awful. I felt so powerless. I knew what was happening to me, but unlike you, I couldn't speak out about it because no one saw me. I was invisible. My voice was inaudible. So to think that you, when you were only 11 years old, spoke up, you are my hero. I am so proud of you. And so, Bo and Petra, what I want you to talk about is the fact that, again, how this particular cause, the things that so many people are now starting to come out about, is now creating an opportunity for other abuse victims to come out and speak. Your thoughts?
You want me to start?
Yes.
Well, first I'm going to put out a prayer request that Tyler Perry comes and blesses me. Oh, these words, wait. Come on, man. I've written
all right. We're going to keep shooting for him every year.
But one of these years, I'll get him. But, you know, he wasn't the first. I mean, the letter was fabulous. Actually, the first celebrity that I know about that came out was Carlos Santana. And
that's
then
right.
This year, you know, former boxer Sugar Leonard, Senator Scott Brown of Massachusetts, Corey Haynes, Corey Feldman, Paul Stanley came out about bullying, comedian Daryl Hammond. You know, a lot of celebrities are doing the right thing. But, you know, Tyler Perry's special. He always, you know, he's always been in the forefront. And I think for him to send that letter to that boy is going to change that boy's life. And, you know, I just want, if that boy's listening, I want him to know that we are here. Come and find us and we will get you help.
Right.
Period.
Bo, your comments?
Yeah, you know, I can't add a whole lot to that, but it's just, you know, it's just incredible that a child that young has got the gumption to say anything at all to anybody about it. And you know, I want to. It's funny you mention that. I just looked. I want to share something with you that I wrote, and it's a little different than that. But I was asked to write something from the perspective of that 10-year-old boy, and I want to share that really quick with you. It's very brief.
Please.
To give you a sense of what that little child may have been feeling while it was going on. Here we go. People have been doing things to me I don't like for a long time. So I really don't know if what they're doing is okay or not okay, or if I'm supposed to say anything, or even if I can say anything, or if I do, will anyone believe me? All I want is for someone to help me to get this to stop. It feels awful. I feel awful. Sometimes I just want to go away. But you saw it happening. I saw the look on your face and in your eyes. The disgust, the belief, the disbelief, the fear. In that instant, that split second, I knew what was happening was not okay and has never been okay. Your face let me know that. You didn't have to say a word. And you didn't. You didn't say a word. All I wanted is for it to stop, for someone to protect me. And you didn't. You walked away and never said a word, ever. I just want to go away forever. And that's how a little child feels when that kind of stuff was going on.
Yeah, that's powerful. Okay, so we're approaching the closing segment of the show today. We have about 10, 15 more minutes remaining. And I want to kind of get Petra some final thoughts, you know, first about today's show. And then secondly, I hear you got a new book coming out. I want you to talk a little bit about that.
Well, the book is it's actually a book for beginners coming out in the music business on how to, you know, go about setting up your promotion, how to get a gig, how to put your CD together, fill out a copyright form, you know, and I took my lifetime of experience as a professional musician and put it into a book so that I could sell this book to earn money for this foundation.
Awesome.
And it's available. You go to petraluna.com, PetraLuna.com, and you can buy the book on Amazon Kindle or on regular old Amazon.
Okay.
And, all the money goes to the cause, all of it. It's hard-lined to the PLUNA Foundation bank account.
Wonderful. Okay, any final thoughts?
Any final thoughts? You know, Patrick, this is your second year helping me with Male Abuse Awareness Week. This show has moved me and inspired me. And, Bo, it is a pleasure to know you, and I look forward to a bright future for this campaign and for us. And, you know, Patrick, thank you. I want to do it again next year, Patrick.
Okay. Just call as always. You know I'm here for you, Patrick.
I know you are. Thank you so much for always supporting Male Abuse Awareness Week, December 1st through 8th. And this was a great show, really great show.
Awesome. Thank you. Bo, final comments.
Yeah, it is a great show, Patrick, and I'm so glad to be involved in it and with you, Petra, and in the Male Abuse Awareness Week. It's just awesome that we can do this year after year. I look forward to it next year. I missed it last year. But you can bet I'll be suiting up and showing up every year. And, Patrick, for you to help us and for us to get the word out there through any media that's available, you know, men come forward. And I just have to encourage men, you know, it's tough. This is a hard subject. It's hard to come forward. Just know that there are people like myself available. There are foundations like the P. Luna Foundation. There is Male Abuse Awareness Week. There's all kinds of help out there available. There are lots of ears, and just all you have to do is just open your mouth just a little bit, and you've got a place to land. That's all I can say. It'll change your life once you start opening your mouth.
That is awesome, and I'm going to get my co-host to chime in here. Jimmy, you still with us?
I am.
Give us your final thoughts.
I'm another person. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine. That's fine. I have to say, just in closing, that this that once again, this has been a great show. I'm glad that we are part of it in terms of educating the world about our survivors of abuse, and that it comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors, and that, you know, we should do more to protect our babies. But as Bo said, just believe them when they tell us, and not question or not belittle or shame them even more than they already shame, but to believe them and to just give them that ear. And I think that was a great answer to that question, and hopefully we can begin to take them serious when they do come to us, and that we can then be the one adult that they can trust that would take care of them and protect them. So once again, an awesome show, and to all the guests and those that called in that made it be a great show, we thank you for that.
Yeah, I definitely concur with you. I just want to remind everyone that's listening and all our guests that's in the chat room and on the call that, you know, we really are here to support the small business and nonprofits. So if you have a cause or a topic, last week we talked about we have a military soldier that's getting out of the military, and we wanted to create a venue for them to talk about what that transition experience. And we're going to extend that conversation next week, and we're going to have a lot of military veterans on to talk about, you know, that transition out of the military, what it's like to come home from the war. I have experience in that area as well when I was, you know, in Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and I got out of the military and made a transition into civilian community, what that transition is like. And so I want to encourage people to contact us, you know, via TaylorMade101.com or our blogs. Go out there on our blogs. I'm putting it out there in the chat room for you to go out there and take a look at. But contact us. I want you to all to know that we are going to support you, and we are honored and privileged to be able to provide to give a voice to male abuse awareness. And Petra, I want to give you a one more final thought, and I want you to talk about the whole male abuse awareness. Where did it come from, the beginning in that particular nature, before we close?
Well, you know, I told you the story about my brother, and I just, to me, the biggest factor, you know, and I've been working on this because I'm working on my speech, so, you know, helpforguys.org, guys, H-E-L-P, number four, guys.org, before I forget, but, you know, you just got to do the math on this thing, you know, I mean, one in six boys before the age of 16, they're molested or raped, you know, before their 16th birthday. You know, you got one-third of calls going into 911s of domestic violence are for domestic violence against men. You got bullying as a national conversation. You know, you've got, you know, serious problems, you know, and we can lighten the burden on society of all these huge problems if we address male abuse and the crippling effects of child abuse. And we recognize that males process abuse differently. They process anger differently. They have enormous confidentiality issues. And, you know, this is the one week out of the year where, I'm sorry, ladies, it's about the boys. And it's been the best campaign yet. Our ad, you know, our press release has been on Yahoo News. You know, I was on AM radio on the first. You know, we're doing Patrick Cook Show. You know, we're having our first event. It's better than ever. We're going to grow, and we're going to, you know, MAA Man, that's my merchandise line for male abuse awareness. That's taken off, and just the blessings from God have been enormous this year. And, you know, let's just keep doing it next year. If you got ideas for next year, contact us. We're going to do an event in Los Angeles. And one of these years, Patrick Cook, I'm going to be knocking on your door saying, let's do it in Texas.
No. All righty then. You know, I'll be here to support you. Well, that's our show, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. A special thanks to Bo, Petra Luna, and of course Bill Murray and Jack for calling in and telling us their stories. We encourage you to go out to TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com for all the latest and greatest commentary on the current events. That's TaylorMade, TaiTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaiLorMade101.com. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site. This is my blog. That's at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. Remember, it is written, for my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged. Stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.